This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehis Wuhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
they asked both the governments of Cameroon and the armed gangs to allow children to have their basic right to education.
That's reporter Moki Edwin Kinzeka, who met with two young Cameroonians traveling to risky areas to use music to spread peace. Details next.
Also, the U.S. Embassy in Kinshasa has been closed for more than a week because of a terrorist threat, and a campaign in several African nations to have their artistic treasures in Western Europe and North America repatriated is gaining momentum.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Two singers are traveling through the volatile English-speaking regions of Cameroon in hopes of ending a war that has killed more than 1,200 people. Their only weapons are a guitar and voices they use to spread messages of peace in song. Moki Edwin Kinzeka met them in the English-speaking northwest village of Santa and reports.
I want to know, where have they gone to
These are the voices of 24-year-old Emmanuel Bilashi and 31-year-old Linford C. singing in the northwest village of Santa. In the song, the two are calling on armed gangs to drop their weapons and stop attacking, killing, kidnapping, and destroying public buildings. They ask both the governments of Cameroon and the armed gangs to allow children to have their basic right to education.
We are tired of war, violence. Schools are locked up. Our brothers and sisters are being killed every day, and things are not moving. Everywhere is just stagnant, and let them drop the weapons. Violence is not what we need, but peace and love.
You've made me a pillar for kingdom building, Lord. You've made me a material.
In this other song, the two say the best gift of life is love. Linford C. says even the fighters need love.
They are having consciousness and they are still having that soft spot in their heart for the love of the nation. We as young people, we want a future. We have a part to play like nation builders. We are telling ourselves that we don't want to be the leaders of tomorrow, but we want to be the leaders of today. If there is no platform of peace, then that dream of us or that reality of today, it is having no place.
Bilashi says they created the duo 4 months ago after violence in the northwest town of Bamenda killed one of C's family members and two of Bilashi's. Among the 23 people listening to them in Santa is 27-year-old Rigobert Kima. Kima says he recently fled from a camp of armed fighters near the northwest village of Bafut.
I opted to come, so the thing was not easy, but we just managed to escape from the bushes. We passed through Fringem, Bafut, before came to Bamenda.
Unrest in the northwest and southwest regions began in 2016 when teachers and lawyers staged protests against what they called the marginalization of English speakers in this mostly French-speaking nation. The government says that since then, over 1,200 civilians, soldiers, and armed separatists have been killed. Bilashi and C have performed in Santa, Bamenda, Akum, Nkwen, Bambili, and Bambui. Many say the duo's initiative is courageous. Within the past 2 months, two missionaries, Charles Truman Wesco from the United States and Cosmas Ondari from Kenya, were killed in the restive regions where they were preaching peace. Mancho Ivo, an inhabitant of Akum, whose poultry business has been shut down by the fighting, listened to the duo and liked what he heard. He said he prays their message can heal Cameroon. He added, "We thank them for their courage, which may as well be the beginning of the solution to our problems." Moki Edwin Kinzeka, for VOA News, Santa, northwestern Cameroon.
U.S. Embassy in Kinshasa has been closed for more than a week because of embassy officials say there is a terrorist threat. VOA Africa correspondent Anita Powell is in Kinshasa. She has been trying to find out details of the threat and how it might affect the city and any U.S. government agencies that have operations in the Democratic Republic of Congo. She spoke with our colleague Kate Pound Dawson earlier today.
That's a great question, and one that not only have I posed to numerous officials, both American, Congolese, and otherwise, but one that the people of Kinshasa are asking. The U.S. Government has said officially very little. They've said that they've received a credible threat of terrorism, but they will not say who, they will not say what they're proposing to do, and they won't give any more details. And they are saying that they won't speak to the press today because the embassy is closed.
Are any other embassies or any Congolese government offices in the capital closed because of a terrorism threat?
Not to my knowledge, no. No other organizations appear to have reacted to this threat that the Americans are reporting. In fact, everything in Kinshasa today, I'm in central Kinshasa as we speak, looks like business as normal. There is not an abnormal security presence. There's not an abnormal police presence. And everything looks very, very normal, except people have heard of this threat and they are confused because there doesn't seem to be anything wrong.
What has the DRC government said?
So I spoke to the government spokesman earlier today, and the most he could tell me, the most he would tell me, is that the American government had not given the Congolese government any information on this threat. And that's a very interesting thing to say because this threat would affect infrastructure in Congo. It would ostensibly affect Congolese citizens, Congolese nationals, Congolese bystanders. And so it is very odd that the government does not know any details about this threat that the Americans say that they've received.
Now, at this point, what operations of the U.S. government are affected?
So right now, the embassy itself is closed. Embassy officials, press officials have been responsive in that they are working remotely. But as it stands right now, the embassy itself is closed. I drove by the embassy on Monday, and it appeared to be very, very quiet. The consular offices are closed. There are no queues outside the embassy. There does not appear to be, from what you can see from the outside, extra security or anything abnormal. But it does look very quiet, and there doesn't appear to be anything happening. And when you ask the press office, they say the embassy and its operations are closed.
So, Anita, how does this affect non-State Department activities, such as U.S. efforts to help with containing the Ebola outbreak in eastern DRC, or any U.S. Efforts to monitor the election process in the DRC? Does the embassy closure affect those operations?
So the short answer to that is it's not entirely clear at this point. I've been in communication with the embassy, and they have told me that the CDC, for example, the Centers for Disease Control, is not available because of this embassy closure. So it appears it is affecting at least a few organs of U.S. government activities here. But it's really, really not clear at this time. And as I've said, we have no information.
That was VOA correspondent Anita Powell reporting from Kinshasa. She was speaking with Kate Pound Dawson.
As the 2019 general election campaign in Nigeria kicks off, reporter Gift Aguiriga highlights the issues of the major political parties, the APC and PDP.
Political parties have officially commenced campaigns nationwide in line with the timetable of the Independent National Electoral Commission, INEC, for the February elections. President Muhammadu Buhari, who is seeking a new term as the candidate for the ruling All Progressives Congress, unveiled this campaign with a slogan of the next level. He urged Nigerians to re-elect him to continue the anti-graft war his administration started in 2015. Sonny Moniedafe, an APC chieftain in Abuja, built boasted of the ruling party's foundational work since inception and encouraged Nigerians to re-elect Buhari for continuity.
Passion was three-pronged: security, corruption, and creation of jobs. Now, these are key things. The president says he has downgraded the Boko Haram movement. Absolutely true. But is it possible to stop suicide bombings from going on? No. Buhari means well about fighting corruption.
He insisted that the president has not reneged on his promises and noted that Nigerians have recorded big gains in the war against Boko Haram terrorists who once controlled close to a score of local government areas in the country's northeast. Buhari's main challenger, Atiku Abubakar of the People's Democratic Party, is a former vice president who has promised to privatize outstanding government-owned refineries and embrace restructuring. Highlighting the main opposition party's plans, a PDP chieftain and founding member, Professor ABC Nwosu, said restructuring will help Nigeria to work again.
Restructuring is central, and that is a major point of disagreement between the PDP and APC. APC doesn't really know how to handle this restructuring, which to me is the number one agenda of Nigerians. But PDP has defined it and what it will do, and some people are working on it right now. The federal government does not have to do everything at the local level. That is restructuring.
Also advised the electorate to vote for candidates with policies to promote development. The Independent National Electoral Commission said in a statement that the campaign period starts 90 days before polling day. The general elections will be held February 16th to elect the president and National Assembly members. This will be the sixth quadrennial election since the end of military rule in 1999. For VOA, this is Gift Agiriga from Abuja, Nigeria.
A campaign in several African nations to have their artistic treasures found in museums across Western Europe and North America repatriated is gaining momentum. Activists in Kenya have triggered a debate dubbed Bring Our Things Back. From Nairobi, Ruben Chama reports.
The debate is part of the International Inventories Program, a research and exhibition project led by the National Museums of Kenya in collaboration with other organizations supporting the creative industry. George Juma Ondeng is the coordinator of public programs at the National Museums of Kenya.
What we are doing as IEP is just to develop a catalogue of Kenyan museums outside, more like a provenance research, to determine how they reached there. So we'll have ideas after the end of the project. Because if we don't map them, you see, we are a colonial creation, so our independence came at 1963, and our institutions then were still dominated by especially museum structure. Remember, who was the director for a long time, there are certain narratives he could not pursue.
He says the latest effort involves investigation and creation of an inventory of cultural Kenyan objects outside the country that are held by various museums and institutions around the world.
One of the things we know, the head of Koitalel, Arap Somoe, and his objects that are related around him, those are national treasures. We hope they'll come back. There's also the man-eaters of Savo, the lions killed. Those ones also naturally need to come back. This research that we're going to do will also unveil other culturally significant objects that we may not know of.
The latest move comes in the wave of similar attempts by other African nations, including Egypt, Benin, and Ethiopia, to have their historical treasures returned. Last year, French President Emmanuel Macron, while on his African tour, supported the idea of returning African art to its countries of origin. French authorities have since agreed to return 26 African artworks claimed by Benin. Britain also is moving to return some artworks. Jim Chuchu is from the Nest Collective, one of the partner organizations supporting the repatriation of Kenyan objects.
For us as Kenyans, for whom and for many African countries, identity is a source of so much conflict. I always ask, how will we know who we are if we don't know who we were? And how will we know where we're going if we didn't know where we came from? These objects are not objects necessarily to Kenya. They are a source of something that could also fix a lot of the problems that we have in Kenya. So for a museum in Paris to prioritize the capacity of a French child to see Kikuyu dancing spears over what those spears could do to Kenya, it bothers me.
Nungari Mwangi is a doctoral candidate in international development from the University of Cambridge.
It's a painful debate because we have to think about all the violences that have been committed against us historically and the best way of going around, you know, restituting what belongs to us in such a way that is going to give us greater education about ourselves. So I think for me the key thing is that in as much as it feels like an oppositional debate, it's really a way for us to get back in touch with who we are, what these objects mean to us, what they mean to us in conversation with the West, and how we can have more constructive future discussions. So it's wonderful that this conversation is by us and for us, and I think it should continue.
French media report that at least 70,000 works of sub-Saharan art in France public collections are held by just one museum in Paris, which opened in 2006 to showcase non-European art, much of it from former French colonies. Other hundreds of thousands of African objects are housed in Belgium, Britain, Austria, and Germany. Activists say National Museums of Africa rarely have collections exceeding 3,000 works, many of which have less artistic value. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
You are listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehi Suhib, 22 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. Two singers are trying to spread messages of peace in the volatile English-speaking regions of Cameroon. And a campaign in several African nations to have their artistic treasures in Western Europe and North America repatriated is gaining momentum. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
Nairobi has started its latest effort to crack down on Matutu buses, the 20,000 transport vehicles that are primary way to get around. Effective around dawn today, armed security officers began turning back matatas trying to enter the central business district. That left thousands of people seeking alternative transport or walking to work. Warnings about the change were issued last Thursday that set specific drop-off and pick-up points outside the city center. Most of the old terminals' points were deserted this morning. In addition to concerns that most commuters don't have alternatives to matatas, the ban will also affect the matatu operators and vendors who use the buses to carry their wares to and from the city. Matatas are often old, run-down, and noisy vehicles that tangle traffic with wide disregard for road laws. Past efforts to limit them have failed.
Energy experts are urging Africa to use more of its gas reserves to fuel economic development. The group gathered in Washington to discuss the role of natural gas in helping to meet the continent's electricity, health, and environmental goals. The meeting coincides with the release of a report funded by Africa 50, which includes the Africa Development Bank, two African central banks, and 27 African countries. Since its creation 2 years ago, Africa 50 reports it has financed solar plants in Nigeria and Egypt, and a thermal plant in Senegal. VOA correspondent Mariama Diallo has more.
In the new report, energy experts say there's tremendous potential for exploration and production of the vast natural gas reserves on the continent. Alain Ebobise, CEO of Africa 50, talked about the findings at Washington's Atlantic Council.
In Africa, we have over 7.5% of the world's known gas reserves. And we're sitting on this bonanza.
He tells VOA that Africa 50 shareholders have committed $850 million so far to rev up the energy industry.
Africa has to use a bit more of its gas reserve to fuel its economic development. And I believe that Africa 50, working with other investors, can invest in those midstream, downstream gas pipelines, gas distribution networks.
As the African population continues to grow and the continent's economy continues to expand, the energy sector must keep with supply demands now and into the future, experts say. Former U.S. Secretary of Energy Ernest Moniz is president of Energy Futures Initiative, which wrote the report.
In terms of the climate and the environmental impacts, the reality is that Africa today uses about 45% coal and oil for electricity. Electricity use is going to grow dramatically. If that grows with coal, it will be very, very bad in terms of carbon footprints.
But Moniz says maximizing the potential of natural gas doesn't exclude the development of renewable energy sources as well.
I believe that natural gas deployment will support renewables deployment. The real challenge finally is going to be, how do we co-develop the gas markets and the gas infrastructure to satisfy the needs of these growing economies?
Ebubise says private sector investment will be needed to meet growing demand.
The game changer today is that there is a consensus among policymakers that they need to do the right thing to attract private investment, because everybody understands that public investment is not enough to bridge that infrastructure gap in the gas space.
Andrew Kamau with the Ministry of Energy and Petroleum in Kenya urges policymakers to move quickly.
Don't forget, capital has a shelf life. If it's not welcome in your country, it will go somewhere else. If you can make decisions quickly as a government and as the bureaucracy, you will attract more people to your country to invest.
Meanwhile, experts say the continent's vast potential remains untapped. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Washington.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, John Dryden, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is James Butte, Managing Editor and host of VOA's Daybreak Africa show. Join us Monday through Friday at 03, 04, 05 and 0600 hours UTC as we bring you the latest Africa news, features and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our mail segment by sending your comments to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Or you can call us on 001-202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. That's Daybreak Africa at 03, 04, 05 and 0600 hours UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we'll discuss the role of political parties in Africa. Is there room for opposition political groups? Does the African citizen have a right to form an independent opinion? Those issues and more on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
The Voice of America, VOA.